Follow the White Rabbit is a game that will teach you practical politics. Practical politics is called practical politics because it is non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is, of course, rule-based politics, which is what you do at the voting booth. It's very, very rule-based and timeline-based, you know, every 4 years, every 2 years, so on and so forth. And full-spectrum practical politics is engaging and taking out an opponent or a system or a corporation, so on and so forth, by any means necessary under the rules or under the laws, but never breaking the rules or never breaking the laws. But to understand anything, we first have to teach you practical politics, which is non-voting politics. The first basics are the art of staying on point or using a talking point and being able to say it over and over again to make your point, not arguing, just making a point. But this is an introduction, again, to Follow the White Rabbit, and Follow the White Rabbit is a game that will teach you practical politics. I'm going to lead off this Follow the White Rabbit, and we're going to talk about a current scenario ongoing involving economics and how it relates to an argument you can make. And this is more specifically tailored to Anglosphere, specifically in the UK, and most definitely in America with the Republican Party, especially, and these neocons. There is an argument that has been ongoing. I have never in my life heard it explained to me simply until the past maybe a few years or so. One of the wise men talked to me about it, and the wise man is a wise man because he's wise. But it's a banking argument, and it goes back a long, long ways. And it goes back to the two different types of banking philosophies. And these philosophies are right now coming to head. If you're alive on this planet, you realize there's something called American dollar. And the American dollar has been coming under a great deal of heat, verbally and whatnot. Anglo banking is being attacked right, left, and center. this attack has been led by the Russians. But let me go into the two types of central banks. And the two different philosophies behind it. And I won't get into some broad philosophical or conspiracy theories or anything like that. That's not what this is about. This is about a simple overlay so you can understand it and understand what these people are talking about and how you can use it to your advantage if you're ever trying to appeal to the elites or make yourself sound intelligent. And you should always know the current argument so you can bring it back to getting yourself in a position to lead, right? Especially if you're in somewhere like the Republican Party. You can really hammer the neocons over a couple of these topics and really make them look stupid, which this is happening behind the closed doors. But there are two types of banking philosophies, as it was explained to me. And again, I'm not an economist, so I would expect some of the guys on Whitaker Online that are economists to go into a little bit more of this. But I'm going to give you a broad overview of the two philosophies, and they're very simple, as it was explained to me. I'm going to explain to you in a very simplified way. Because I am not an economist, so these are not things that I ever heard of, and I've had economics, I've had accounting, maybe you have too, and I guarantee you haven't heard these two things. There are two types of central banks. One is a state central bank. It's where the state owns a central bank, and a state itself directly issues currency. And it issues currency as a receipt for goods and services. Pretty simple. A state can loan money, or it can issue money. Yes, it can issue currency, what we will call currency. And currency, the big deal with a state doing it directly is a state does it debt-free. Yeah, a state can issue money debt-free. Pretty interesting, pretty simple. I assumed all central banks were state-owned and the state operated directly, but apparently there's another philosophy of central banking, and that's the central banking that we're going to be talking about. And I'm going to give you current examples of the two because the two are going head-to-head. There's another type of private central banking, and a private central bank is where a group owns a central bank. One of the challenges to this is that the private central bank is loaning the state money. And they're creating what we would call money, not currency. Or money, and simply is monetized debt. In other words, a private central bank cannot issue true currency as a receipt for goods and services. It's loaning money. It cannot issue currency. It can only loan money. A bank can only loan money. That's one of the challenges here. In other words, the bank, a private central bank can never create the interest, only the principal. And so under this type of system, the argument goes that it's a monetized debt system, and the debt has to grow because of the compound nature of interest. Right now, in Anglosphere, you have a Federal Reserve Bank. The Federal Reserve Bank, now growing up, I assume the Federal Reserve Bank was part of the government. Well, the Federal Reserve Bank is no more federal than the Federal Express. It's different. It's a different philosophy of money. It comes back to, it's a private central bank. What's special about the Federal Reserve Bank is the Federal Reserve Bank is a dream private central bank. Why? Because they have a reserve status currency. Every commodity in the world is priced in dollars. If you want to buy oil and you're in the Korean won, you have to convert those Korean wons to dollars and buy that oil. It is a beautiful scheme. If you're a private central banker, it's a dream. I'm going to repeat that. If you want to buy gold, you have to convert your Deutschmarks or your euros to dollars to buy gold. It's an incredible advantage. It's so incredible that it's a dream. All you have to do is not go too far into debt or do anything to screw it up with international relations. I'm going to go into that. But it is the dream of all. It's the magnum opus of private central banks. I won't go into who owns it and all that other kind of stuff because I'm not fully an expert on that. And there's a lot of different conspiracy theories. And my policy is the same as anyone. Peas in a pod don't have to conspire. It's generally two philosophies in banking, and you have to, in my opinion, you should understand them and how to make an argument to knock out the neocons over foreign policy. So when it comes down to the state, where does this argument come to a head? Historically, it's come to a head a lot more than most of us know. There's two famous modern instances of a state issuing true currency directly and doing extremely well, almost immediately. There was a case, this little white rabbit over there in Europe, his name was Adolf Hitler. Apparently, he read a book by a man named Feder, F-E-D-E-R. Feder was a German economist. And he wrote a book. He wrote a book on how Germany could solve its debt problem after World War I. Germany had a huge, tremendous problem. They had a private central bank, and they had debt just exploded, and the currency went to heck in a handbasket and everything else. But his premise was, the only thing Germany has to do is they have to do what the Americans did prior to the American Revolution, and do what Abraham Lincoln did during the Civil War, and they had very good luck with it, issue currency directly and not go with a private central bank. So Adolf Hitler, apparently, the story goes, he read this book by Feder, and when he got into power, he basically kicked out the private central bank. Yeah, he didn't have the private central bank at all. He didn't have Anglo-style banking at all. He issued currency directly. He issued those Reichsmarks. And the theory would go that he would come to full employment, just like they were doing back in the American colonies. American colonies, prior to the American Revolution, issued currency directly. They issued currency as a receipt against goods or services. The greenback dollars that Abraham Lincoln had luck with, apparently he did very well with that to most economists. He was issuing currency, true currency. It's not private central bank. He's not getting money loaned to him by a private central bank. So Hitler read this, and the theory would go, if you did this, Germany, it would restore your unemployment, I mean, you would go to full employment pretty quickly, and you would restore Germany's prosperity, and then pay down a lot of whatever lingering debt you have out there, you'd pay down it immediately, pay down very quickly, simply because you're not going into a monetized debt system. Again, you're issuing true currency. You're not issuing a facsimile of currency, or what we will call money. You know, there's an old saying in Germany. The Germans used to say that, the Americans say we have all kinds of money. The German says, well, we're wealthier because we don't have any money. You know, that was a saying in World War II. Well, they got rid of this monetized debt type of private central banking. And lo and behold, guess what it did? Germany came to full employment. The next thing you know, they paid off all their debts. They went into a barter scheme, and they did tremendously well overnight. Overnight, it was shock and awe economically. Of course, it probably had a lot to do with them being Germans, too. But there's another modern case. There's another modern case going on right in front of our face that has done the exact same thing, albeit with a new twist. The Central Bank of China. The Central Bank of China, the People's Bank of China, I believe it's called directly, does not borrow its money from a private central bank. It is not a private central bank loaning the state money. No, they're issuing true currency against the goods and services as a receipt against the goods and services of China. That's one of the reasons why they're debt-free. They're not in a monetized debt type of system. They are in a, they try to do exactly what the Germans have done, and they've done it very, very well. The flaw in the Chinese model is that you now have a global, Federal Reserve Bank, a Federal Reserve Bank with a reserve status currency, and all the commodities are priced in dollars. So what did you do? You linked, they linked their yuan to the dollar. The dollar is, so it's kind of funny, you have the largest known modern sense outside, you know, the only time since the Reichsbank where someone has a state has issued money directly, and this is a state issuing money directly and linked to the largest, the dream private central bank. You know, a central bank that does, they don't need anything linked in gold, because to buy gold, you gotta first convert your money and your you know, Russian rubles into dollars. It's kind of a funny situation here. But it is a big argument. You hear it over and over again. I never understood what the difference was. Now, philosophically, obviously, it seems like it does very, you do very well for yourself to kick out the private bankers. Well, we're not here to be all idealistic and all that. I just want you to understand the exact approach, and I'm gonna go into some different things I would do if I were a Republican or if I were repealing, to try to knock out the neocons. You see, under this private central banking scheme, under this private central banking scheme, the only flaw is, under this philosophy of money of private central bank in something like the Federal Reserve Bank, is if someone is big enough to really cause you problems, and you don't work with them, or you don't create win-win situations, because everyone in the world 10 years ago wanted to work with America. Everyone in the world, the Russians understood that the Federal Reserve Bank was a private central bank. They understood, they're very sophisticated there. But at the same time, no one's interested in necessarily knocking you out as long as you're not screwing them over being too greedy. What these fools did, the neocons went in there and tried to take over Russia. They tried to split the place up. They tried to destroy the place, so much so that the oligarchs, which are all tied to neocons, are sitting in London, and some of them are already have sentences on their head in Russia for 13, 15 years, or they're already in jail in Russia. And, you know, you got these guys like Berezovsky. I don't know if I pronounce his name correctly. He's got to sit in London. He can't move because the Russians have him. He's been in trial in absentia and sentenced to like 15 years or something like that. There's guys like this in Tel Aviv, and they're all connected to the neocons. The neocons cannot have a relationship with Russia. They got to go to war with them. But you can't go to war with Russia. You can't. You can't. This relationship the neocons have with Russia has cost the private central bankers in Anglosphere everything. Everything. Because Russia is the only one on the planet that can actually effectively lead a coalition against them. Why? Because they're sophisticated and they understand it. Another thing they have is, guess what Russia has? Russia has the largest natural resources in the world, easily. Under one roof. They have the largest natural gas reserves. They have the second largest oil reserves. And that's just what we know about. Who knows what they have? They could easily have Saudi Arabia eclipsed by two and not tell you. That's Russia. I mean, if you're the largest if you have the largest oil reserves in the world, maybe it's to your interest not to let other people know if they're not treating you well or whatever. Russians are sneaky like that. Who can blame them? If you're long a bunch of oil, you know, and you're an oil trader, if you're long a bunch of oil, you might not want people to know how long you are. You know, but this relationship, this inability to work with the Russians have cost them everything. Have cost the money people in Anglosphere everything. It put them on the ropes permanently, and may have put them under permanently. But using that and using their inability to work with the Russians, I would sit and I would pound the neocons every day because the neocons are a big problem for us. Yes, they're a big problem. We got a bird in the hand, the Republicans, and we can't use it because of the neocons and the Lone Rangers. The Lone Rangers are going to have problems, and I'm going to go into all this. We're going all into this in a few minutes here. In the next X many minutes, we're going into this. But you can use that by understanding this, you can appeal to this relationship you could easily have with the Russians. The Russians offered to spend, I don't know, there's only a 65-mile difference between Alaska and Siberia. The Russians did all kinds of feasibility studies, and this started a long, long time ago. I mean, one of the czars talked about building a tunnel underneath Siberia to drive all the way to New York and stuff like that. Well, if you can get to Alaska, you can drive to New York, right? And it's only 65 miles or so between Alaska and Siberia. You just got to put a tunnel underneath there. Well, the Republicans, Putin himself, even as late as 2006, wanted to put a tunnel underneath there or do a couple tunnels. Yeah, you could put a pipeline underneath one into Alaska. And let's face it, there's still all kinds of pipelines coming out of Alaska. You could do all kinds of interesting things with the Russians in regard to natural resources. If that relationship with Russia was not damaged, you wouldn't have near as many global problems with the dollar because no one could rally against you. Russia has led everyone against us and the dollar. In relation to this private central bank and the way the neocons have used it to screw over a lot of people. Now, how do the neocons get away with this? Well, I'll tell you what the neocons do. The neocons says, well, the Federal Reserve Bank, we got everything on the planet priced in dollars, but the big key relationship is oil. So we got to be in that Middle East. We got to support that Israel, because if we don't support Israel, we don't have a partner in the Middle East. Well, we're not going to be able to control anything and get that Saudi Arabia oil and so on and so forth, etc. So we got to have our nose in the Middle East. Well, what you would say is the direct opposite. Well, you've already screwed up our relationship with Russia. We could have already been diversified out of the Middle East. We could have been diversified out of the Middle East. They could have had a pipeline. By 2000, they could have had a pipeline underneath Alaska, and we could be diversifying our energy resources night and day out of the Middle East. We're always going to have Saudi Arabia. Who else are they going to sell all that oil to? Everyone wants to sell us oil, but we want to diversify away from Arabs and Muslims and into European Christians. It's just common sense. By the way, you can divide and rule the Jews over, too. Some of the Jews are smart. They even want to do that. Why are we listening to these neocons? It's much easier to work with Russians than it is Muslims. Putin might be a lot of things, but, you know, he's not interested in taking over. I mean, he could care less if Israel exists or not. That's your problem. He could care less if it's there, fine. If it's not, fine. But having all these relationships, these tenuous relationships in the Middle East regarding natural resources is too dangerous long term. You want to diversify out of that. Russia was a golden opportunity. They dropped the ball on it. They dropped the ball because their ethnic interests won't allow them. Not just, by the way, even in regards to Israel, it's smart to diversify. But they can't have a relationship with Russia. They got to go to war with Russia. Why? Because they've already started a war with Russia a long, long time ago. You know, when you have all the people attached to the neocons, they're not necessarily attached to Hebrews per se, but a lot of them are. All these neocon oligarchs, which happen to be Hebrew, running around Russia who get busted, thrown in jail, or wanted dead or alive. Well, you can't really have a relationship with them, and it's caused a lot of international problems, in my opinion. It's caused a huge problem for Anglo banking for the reasons I just laid out. If you have a dollar and your dollar is reserve status, and the Bank of England and everything's tied to this, you have every commodity in the world priced with dollars. You want to keep that advantage. You want, you know, I'm not being idealistic. I'm just giving you a way to appeal to people. But you want to keep that, and one way to keep that is not screw over people or to pick your enemies. Making Russia an enemy was very stupid. Very, very stupid. Barack Obama has went to Russia, and from what I've heard, he was very, very respectful. Probably because the Russians know more about him than we could ever hope to. Yeah, anyone raised a communist or around communists, it wouldn't matter whether it's McCain in a communist camp or Obama, who was raised around famous communists, the Russians are going to know more about him than we could hope to. That's good for our race. That's very good. Who knows? He probably couldn't get away with doing anything to Russia. But he was very respectful. That's intelligent. The neocons can't do that. They got to be belligerent. They got to go to war. They got, you know. But you can appeal to certain elite parties who are sick of the neocons, and definitely make a case for yourself. especially in regard to the Republicans. You can kill the neocons' big forte is this Middle East, and we got to have this all these relationships in the Middle East because Israel's there, and we got to have oil, and oil's there, and the dollar's priced in oil, or oil's priced in dollars because natural resources are priced in dollars, and we have this private central bank, and we got to keep this relationship. Well, you can go the other direction. We need to start dealing with the Russians better because the Russians want to put tunnels. They want to pay for tunnels in from Siberia into Alaska. They want to ship us as much of their oil as we can handle, and who knows what they may find for us. And now we got a central bank where a private central bank where everything's priced in dollars. It's to our advantage to develop a good positive relationship with the Russians. Why? Because they're the largest natural resource producer on the planet. Second, they're the largest European Christian country. They're very easy for us to deal with. They're a natural ally. We're not dealing with Arabs, and we're not dealing with Jews. It's very simple. It's me a white rabbit, you a white rabbit. It's very simple. Believe it or not, there's plenty of Anglo elites that understand that. They're not worried about Russia blowing us up. They're not worried about that unless they push them in the corner or do something crazy. Arabs become a little dicey. On top of that, you know, who is the Saudis going to sell their oil to? So diversifying was a natural thing. Why they got away with doing that, I have no idea. Probably because no one was smart enough to make an appeal like I just did. But you can really kill them because this has hurt them. It's hurt them bad. The only party on this planet that could rally a case against the against the U.S. dollar is the Russians, and they've done it. They've done it successfully. They've done it across the globe. They have the intelligence network to do it, and they'll continue to do it until you create a win-win situation with them. And they may do it just to take you out, period. But you can, either way, you can really hurt the neocons by understanding this. They're not super-duper foreign policies, and there's no reason we should have our nose all over this Middle East situation and not at least be diversifying our natural resources out of it. But all these problems come back to their inability to work with the Russians, and they can't work with the Russians because they tried to split up the state and tried to kill them. And by the way, even if you're a BNP party member and you're talking to conservatives and you're talking to elites in London, non-neocon elites, they understand that very well. So listen to what I said again and make your case, because when you deal with the Bank of England, you're dealing with a private central bank. Yeah, they're not issuing true currency. They're loaning money. And we need to understand the difference and not get, I'm not an economist. So obviously, in my opinion, it seems like we do very well under this states type of central bank where we don't have any debt. Obviously, being debt-free, issuing money debt-free directly from the state sounds very good to me. Also, but at the same time, I understand that the Bank of England at one time, although it may have been a private central bank, was run very well. In the 1950s, the Federal Reserve Bank, you had that Federal Reserve Chairman Martin, who said the object of every central bank chairman, his job is to take the punch bowl away when the party gets going. Don't print any money. All these hard money bankers, they're out there. So there has been times when you had private central banks that there wasn't a lot of debt going around. They weren't printing a bunch of money, and you know, when it comes down to the Fed, they have a huge advantage, and the neocons pretty much blew it out the window. They blew it out the window, not because of their treatment of the Chinese, because the Chinese can't do anything without a lot of help, but Russia killed us. And you can kill them by pointing this out over and over again, that they're stupid. You know, neocons are stupid animals. I mean, how could you drop the ball on something so simple? The Russians are offering to pay to run a pipeline, to run actual tunnels underneath Siberia. It's only 65 miles. They've had this plan since one of the czars, apparently. And Putin offered, as late as 2006, to let's do more natural resources deals. Give us win-win situations. Maybe they want a deal like the Saudis. The Saudis are allowed to buy treasury bills, and they're allowed to invest in certain areas of American industry. Well, who cares? Russians are all European Christians. Let them come in and invest in them. Let them recycle their petrodollars, as we'll call it. That's what they call it in Saudi Arabia, petrodollars. Let them recycle it into the American economy. So what? So what? Some Russian owns 5% of some oil company here, or owns or buys part of a bank here. So what? Saudis do it all the time. I would rather have the Russians do it than the Saudis. By the way, a lot of Anglo elites probably think that way too. The non-neocon ones. But you got these neocons, so you're going to have to sound like you know something about foreign policy. One of the challenges when you get into the British National Party is they tend to be nationalistic. It doesn't seem like they're very up to date on what's going on here and the openings they have to make them sound like geniuses. And I'm not a genius. I'm not an economist. I cannot make the sophisticated arguments. I know the basics. But I know if you have a private central bank where every commodity in the world is priced in dollars, you want to hold on to that advantage. They have a vested interest in that. So appealing for them, showing them ways to do that, and in killing our enemy at the same time is very, very good. That's practical politics. I was asked a question on the blog by Frank. Frank has made some nice comments, and then he also asked a question. In your opinion, I'm a racist, etc. Repeater hit the most common demoralizer between the eyes. Well, thank you, Frank, but I didn't come up with it. How about showing us some repeaters that attack or redirect enemy energy flow from demoralizing enemy talking points like white supremacists, anti-Semite, hater, white nationalists, neo-Nazis. I hear those in play as often as racists. Yeah, they're all forms of wordism, but how about some approved repeaters that specifically target them? Well, Frank, what I do time and time again is there is no right or wrong in this. There's only cardinal sin. Cardinal sin is not going into mantra-type thinking, and not mentioning genocide, or not getting in a position to hit them with a mantra or something based on that. Or something so close, Bob wouldn't throw a chair at you for it. You know, when Bob's a coach, he's Bobby Knight, and Bobby Knight can throw some chairs. But that's okay. That's his style. So don't get worried about that. And by all means, if you have a question, ask it. There's many bright minds on that website, and a direct question about what to say in a particular instance, you'll get a couple good answers, and that's what they're there for. And they do it every day, all day. But you're asking me directly on what I do. I always do the same thing over and over again. I say, in your opinion, I'm a white supremacist. You're just saying that because I'm white. White supremacist is just a way to stigmatize white people who don't want to be genocided or don't want to be blended out of existence. And what they will do time and time again, depending on how you do it, you know, in your opinion, I'm a hater. You're just saying that because I'm white. Hate is just a word used to stigmatize white children who don't want to be harassed endlessly over this stuff. What they will do time and time again is they will try to prove it's not their opinion. As soon as they do that, you point out the obvious. No one's flooding Mexico with non-Mexicans. And no one says there's a race problem in Mexico and flooding Mexican with non-Mexicans and trying to give them affirmative action, special rights and privileges in an attempt to blend them out of existence. No one's flooding Japan with non-Japanese and giving them affirmative action, special rights and privileges and attempting to blend them out of existence. No one's flooding Africa with non-Africans and giving them special rights and privileges and free health care in some attempt to create some blended humanity. Only white children are being targeted like this. Only white countries are doing it. Only white leaders are pushing it. It's genocide. And so what I am doing is consistently trying to rephrase, and I always do it within your opinion, more times than not. when it comes down to anti-Semite, there are many different approaches. Bob's is hardcore, you know. What Bob did, what I mentioned Bob, you know, doing... by saying, you know, affirmative, yes, I am an anti-Semite. You know, I believe everyone deserves a home, which is to say I believe all Jews deserve a home, somewhere they can Judaize each other. But I also believe all Jews should go to their home. I don't like being Judaized. Yes, that makes me an anti-Semite. That's kind of hardcore. You may not want to do that. I generally go, in your opinion, I'm an anti-Semite. You just say that because I'm critical of Hebrew leadership. Anti-Semitism is just a word used to stigmatize Hebrew leaders. And if they label a black nationalist, or if they label, I'll just say, in your opinion, he's anti-Semite. You're just saying it because he's not Jew. Anti-Semitism is just a code word you use to against any Gentile who has an opinion that goes against Hebrew leadership. Just say, for what it's worth, I'm not. I always say, for what it's worth, I don't dislike you for being Jewish. I don't dislike you for Judaism any more than I just dislike a capitalist for being for capitalism. I dislike you because you look like us and you have no loyalty to us and you're constantly attacking white children. And then I point out the obvious. The Anti-Defamation League always targets and harasses Christians. Many Jews will agree with you on this. On the Daily Kos, KOS, they had a huge article calling the Anti-Defamation League a supremacist organization just a few days ago. They said they're not ethnic, they're Jewish supremacists. They're saying what David Duke is saying. I'd point out the obvious. The Anti-Defamation League has not, in one time, to my knowledge, attacked Christians in Korea. They've not attacked Christians in Africa, which is the largest growing Christian community in the history of the world. They've never once attacked Christians, to my knowledge, in Latin America. They attack Christians in only European countries. Yes, and they're part and parcel of this. Yeah, the Anti-Defamation League, and that also gives me an opportunity to go into the race problem. Yeah, the Anti-Defamation League talks about this race problem all the time. But this race problem only exists in European children's homes, European children's schools, European children's countries. And how are they going to solve this race problem? Well, they're going to bring in a bunch of non-Europeans and try to force blend them out of existence. Their solution to the race problem is genocide. Point out the obvious. You know, many Christians talk about the Anti-Defamation League attack Christians. They're not attacking Christians. If they were attacking Christians, they'd be where there's a lot more Christians. Right? They'd be a little more global. They're not attacking Christians. They're attacking European non-Jews, European Gentiles, or what they call Aryans. And when it comes to white nationalists, I don't know. If you're a white nationalist and you get attacked, I'm not a white nationalist. So I just say I don't believe in anyism. You know, in your opinion, I'm a white nationalist. You're just saying that because I'm white. And then I'm going to point out to them that no one is attacking Mexican nationalists in Mexico. No one's flooding Mexico with non-Mexicans and then attacking Mexican nationalists for being opposed to an attempt at genocide against them. No one's flooding Africa with non-Africans and then attacking African nationalists for being opposed to it. No one's flooding Korea with non-Korean nationalists. With non-Koreans and then attacking Korean nationalists for being opposed to it. Only white children are affected by this. Only white children are stigmatized by this. It's genocide. Anyway, you can always go into mantra thinking somehow, but there's no right or wrong. There's just a cardinal sin, not making your point, and not going into mantra thinking and not mentioning genocide. When in doubt, I noticed you posted some things online. Anytime you post anything online, post the whole entire mantra first. Bob posted it right at his post underneath the races, and I'm going to go into that in a few when I talk about Bobby Knight, because Bob is Bobby Knight when he goes into his coaching mode. You know, it's Bob Whitaker, then you got Bugs, his alter ego, then you got his coaching mode, Bobby Knight. But the mantra is simple: Africa for the Africans, Asia for the Asians, white countries for everybody. It is said that there's a race problem. They say this race problem will be solved when the third world pours into every white country and only into white countries. The Netherlands and Belgium are as crowded as Japan or Taiwan, but no one says Japan or Taiwan will solve this race problem by bringing in millions of third worlders and, quote, assimilating, unquote, with them. Everybody says the final solution to the race problem is for every white country and only white countries to assimilate, intermarry with all those non-whites. What if I said there was a race problem and the race problem would be solved only if hundreds of millions of non-blacks were brought into every black country and only into black countries? How long would it take anyone to realize I'm not talking about a race problem? I am talking about the final solution to the black problem. How long would it take any sane black man to notice this, and what kind of psycho black man wouldn't object to this? But if I tell the obvious truth about the ongoing program of genocide against my race, the white race, liberals and respectable conservatives agree that I'm a Nazi who wants to kill 6 million Jews. They say they are anti-racist. What they are is anti-white. Anti-racist is a code word for anti-white. What I did was chunk that down into talking points. That's for you to make your point on the street. But when you're posting online, the first thing you should post is always the whole entire mantra. Yeah, if you have a chance to read the mantra, read the mantra. When Bob was on Fox News, I'm going to try to get Brian to post that underneath when they put up Follow the White Rabbit 8, I'm going to try to put underneath that what Bob did on Fox News. I'm going to try to get the actual recording so you can listen. The only thing Bob does is read the mantra. You know, don't make it complicated. The only cardinal sin, there's no right or wrong, there's only cardinal sin. The cardinal sin is not going into mantra-type thinking and not making your point about genocide. Don't let them walk away without making your point on that. But if you post it online, post the whole entire thing, and then make your other sub-points later on. But we want a consistent message getting out. And the consistent message always revolves a mantra. When in doubt, you know, I always like the whole thing, but sometimes it's not as simple as reading the whole thing on Fox News like Bob did. I understand that. Another question you forgot to put up, you will always be asked, but you didn't put up, is when asked about miscegenation or mixed race couples. I always do the same thing. I always say that's not a sane question to ask anyone. If Korea was being flooded by non-Koreans and they were giving them affirmative action, special rights and privileges, and an attempt to blend them out of existence, only Korean leaders were doing this, you wouldn't ask a Korean man if he was opposed to that. Would you? What type of moral person wouldn't be opposed to that? I always rephrase it and ask it back. They try to do that. They try to get away with that, but I just state the obvious. If there's an open genocide against Korean children, you're not going to ask, is that okay with you that you get forced blended out of existence? Of course not. Only a sane fool wouldn't object to that. That's what I do. But I generally start out, believe it or not, with simple things like, in your opinion. In your opinion, I'm a hater. I always do the same thing over and over again, because what they're going to try to do is prove it's not just their opinion, it's the world's opinion. Well, no. Because no one's flooding Guatemala with non-Guatemalans and attempting to force blend them out of existence to get rid of some race problem. You're going to point out the obvious. And again, there's not a right or wrong approach. Let's go into Lord Nelson. Lord Nelson was in an actual debate. What's funny about this is we're getting into actual debates. I've never been in an actual debate like Lord Nelson was in. The only actual debate I've seen in politics in a long, long time was when I was real little. Ronald Reagan had a couple actual debates about economics. Yeah, there was an actual debate about economics. We don't see actual debates in politics anywhere in the world. It's very rare to see an actual debate. Abe Lincoln got into actual debates. White nationalists, believe it or not, are getting asked into opportunities to get into actual debates. The guys on Amren, I can't think of his name, Amren.com, A-A-M-R-E-N.com, those guys get into actual debates. I don't mind actual debates, but they should go into some type of mantra. You can get into actual debates and bring in all kinds of things and always bring it back to mantra-type thinking. What Lord Nelson did was he did a debate and he did a basic shutdown. I'm going to read to you the debate. Lord Nelson's debate. A few months ago, I was invited to debate a rabid anti-white. She kicked off the debate by telling everyone how much she felt compelled to stand up to racists like me, especially because she had two white kids. So I had some fun, demanded that this anti-white give reasons as to why her own children should be replaced with children of North African Muslims as the new majority population of the UK. I kept threatening to call her racist if she did not comply. And so when she did betray her own kids and talk about how we all bleed red and the white race is just a social construct, I then switched it around and demanded to know if she would use those same arguments to justify the replacements of black children in African countries, and that I would think she was a racist against black Africans if she did. She could not go there. And she had to admit it was only her own she was using this logic against. At this point, game over. She lost all credibility and became a bit of a laughingstock to all who had been there. Trust me, you had to be there. It woke up everyone who witnessed our little debate. The point is that that's mantra thinking. If I had talked about black crime stacks, scheming Jews, or beautiful white race, I would still be there now, being used like everyone's favorite verbal punching bag. That's an actual debate tactic. Well, that is mantra thinking in a debate. By all means, every time I see something like that on Bugs, on Whitaker Online, I copy and paste it into basically some kind of email thing. You can copy and paste it into Word or whatever you want to do and use it. If you post a question, someone had Tim posted something about social constructs. There are no social constructs under international law. Go to see the local forensic pathologist and pull hair from your head. The pathologist will test it and tell you what race you are. However, to keep his job, he will tell you that race does not exist. Social science and real science are not one and the same. The law only recognizes real science. International law only recognizes real science. No one can plead they were just a social construct at a genocide tribunal. Don't believe me? Just ask Saddam Hussein. There are no social constructs under international law. You see, that's a good point. You could use that in any type of confrontation to make your point, depending on the circumstances. And this is all off of Bugs. So what you need to get in the habit of is getting into a certain mindset and always bring it back to some type of mantra thinking. That's the only cardinal sin. It's not going into mantra thinking and not mentioning genocide when given an opportunity. Even when it comes to rebuttals, I've seen Simmons or Payne or something posted something interesting, a retort, and this is how it goes. Is that something you are parroting from a Marxist book you read? Don't you know that Marxism is long dead and long out of date? If you spend your life parroting things, don't even believe yourself, aren't you just an artificial construct? The fact is, all this old Marxist stuff means is that all Europeans should be genocided. Why do you want to exterminate an entire race of humanity? What would your mom and dad say about you? That's a mommy professor type retort. But you get this type of stuff on Bugs. But all this type of stuff will help you in any type of confrontation or debate. But when in doubt, I do the same thing, in your opinion. And then I get over into some type of mantra type talking point. Most of them, every single one of them, I got off Bugs or Bob's or Simmons or Payne's. I don't invent this stuff because there's a lot of professionals on there. That's what I would recommend you do. Again, the only cardinal sin is not going into mantra type thinking and not learning how to and not making your point about genocide. It doesn't matter how you do it. It's not a how or a why. That can be stylistic. That can be personal. How Payne does it or how Simmons does it, how Bob does it is going to be unique. Bob on Fox News is something very simple. He read the mantra. That's all you have to do. It's just a matter of being on a consistent message over and over again. If you post online, post the whole mantra. Then go into your individual talking points. But definitely get out a consistent message. Hopefully I answered your questions, and when it comes to asking questions on Bugs, feel free to ask them about talking points or about particular tactics, and you'll get a variety of answers, but they'll all be pretty interesting, they'll all be pretty good, and they'll all be something you can make your own and use them. Lord Nelson has a unique style. They're all going to have a unique style, but they're all going to be pretty effective in the long run. It doesn't mean they're perfect. It doesn't mean Simmons is perfect. It doesn't mean Bob is perfect. They may think they are, but they're not. But generally, the ideal is to make your point, and we already have everything you need is there. It's just a matter of making it your own and using it in the right circumstances. But when in doubt, just go with the mantra. One last thing, Frank. I want to talk about one of the last posts on the blog. It's an interesting post. I don't know who it's referring to, but I'm going to read it. The races. Don't let them get away with murder. That is what you do when you allow anyone to talk about mixing the races. It allows them to get away with genocide. They tell you that all races are taking an equal part in this. That is just fair play. It infuriates me when people let this go by while they recited the latest line. One of our spokesmen was doing an interview, and the interviewer mentioned that nobody was demanding that Japan take in immigrants. Our spokesman, however, was busy talking about what an aristocrat he was and let it slide. And then Bob gives his mantra, and that's Bob's. Anti-racist is a code word for anti-white, you know, Africa for the Africans, Asia for the Asians, white countries for everybody. I've already read the mantra, but basically he posts that. You can go to the blog whitakeronline.org. WHITAKERONLINE.org /blog and see it. And that is his latest post, and it's an interesting post. A lot of times when you go on a talk show, I'm going to read this again. One of our spokesmen was doing an interview, and the interview mentioned that nobody was demanding Japan take in immigrants. Our spokesman, however, was busy talking about what an aristocrat he was and let it slide. A lot of times on a call-in radio show, I don't know when this happened, I don't know how this happened, and I don't know who did it. It doesn't really matter. Bob knows, and Bob's a coach. And one thing, I'm going to make a couple points, actually, not just one, but when Bob does something like this, you know, I think of Bob as like Bobby Knight. And now that he's posting again on the blog, that's what he is, Frank. He's Bobby Knight. And Bobby Knight can throw a chair. And that's what he's doing. He's throwing a chair at someone. But one thing I want to make a point of is anytime you're going on, and some of you will be, going on some kind of, let's say a call-in radio show. Or a call-in radio show is you say something and they keep you on for a while. And you hit a mantra or you hit a talking point or whatever. Your job is to obviously get into mantra thinking. That is a cardinal sin. If you don't get into mantra thinking or if you don't make a mantra point on some level, that's a cardinal sin. And you always want to mention the G word. That's what the mantra is about, genocide. But a lot of times on a call-in show, if you say something interesting, they're going to keep you on for a while. It's just the nature of the beast. And if they keep you on for a while, you're going to go to commercial. Why? Because that's the nature of the beast. So if you're on a call-in show and they keep you through a commercial, they're going to ask you a lot of questions. You know, they like you, you're striking up rapport, you say something interesting, you're going to be talking about all kinds of things. That's their job. Their job on a call-in show, when they go call-in on any type of radio show, they're going to talk about everything anyone calls in on. So you're going to be talking about all kinds of interesting stuff. They're going to be asking you questions, and obviously you want to have something in common with them because you're building a rapport. Well, a lot of times when that show clicks back on live, you've got to come back and try to make a mantra point again, and it can be kind of difficult to do. But a lot of times that's where this stuff comes in at, where you're not making a point. Generally, when someone gets you off subject matter, when it comes to an interview, a lot of times that comes between the breaks. You're talking about something else on break, and you let your minds wander. The point I want to make to you is one thing, and by the way, that is a common mistake. I've seen a lot of people make it, and pros can make it. That means if this is your first radio show or your first interview or your first, you're probably going to make some mistakes. If this is the first 10 interviews, you're going to make a mistake. One thing you want to do on a call-in show or anything like that is have the mantra in front of you. You know, print it out and have the mantra in front of you. If you go to the top of the thing, you're going to see the white mantra. Always have that in front of you. When in doubt, read it. When in doubt, just read it off. That's fine. There are no rules of coming back to message, but the only rule is when it comes to the mantra is always make your point, and the point is genocide. But it's very easy on a show, because when you're typically on our call-in show, you may call in, you may wait for an hour, you may make a point. Some of you are going to make a point so well that they want to talk about other things. That's fine. You know, that's fine. They go to break, and next thing you know, those breaks, by the way, can last forever. If you've ever been behind the scenes on a radio show, you think those breaks last 30 seconds a minute, they can seem like eternity. You can talk about the whole entire NASCAR race that happened yesterday. And they will. That's the nature of it. They want to strike up rapport with you, and you want to do the same, right? Maybe you want to get asked back on there so you can make more mantra points. But at the same time, you've got to come back to the message, and it's very easy to get off topic. Especially after a break. It's just the nature of the beast. And one thing I would advise you to do is keep the mantra in front of you, so you can immediately see the mantra and try to come back and make a mantra point about whatever you're talking about. Sure, everything's racial. Yeah, you're talking about NASCAR in between the break, or they're talking about NASCAR. Just point out the obvious. No one's demanding that the Japanese sport Sudoku or whatever no one's demanding that become multiracial or multicultural. No one's demanding that exclusive African sports become multiracial and multicultural. Only white children are affected by this, and only white sports like NASCAR are targeted like this. It's genocide. You can always make a point, but sometimes, it's simple for me to do here, but it's not necessarily easy if you're on an interview show. You're being interviewed for the first time, you come back from break, or you come back from some cutoff, and they're talking to you about all kinds of stuff. Maybe they find you interesting. When you get on the blog and you read some of these posters, some of them are pretty interesting characters. They may be aristocrats, real aristocrats. Who knows? Who cares? I'm just trying to help you out, because if you don't, you're going to get a chair thrown at you. But Bob's just being Bobby Knight. Yeah, Bobby Knight's job is to win games, and if someone's not doing they're not shooting the way they should be shooting, or they get off topic, or they screw up, well, he's going to throw a chair at you. He's not doing it to hurt you. He's doing it to make a point. I don't know who did this. It doesn't really matter. For all I know, it could be yours truly. Yeah, Horace. I don't think I've been on a talk show yet, but Horace could have been on a talk show and did something crazy. I don't know. I don't think so, because typically I would print out the mantra. But coming back from if you've never done one before. And I haven't done that many. I've never done one as Horace yet, that I know of. But if you're coming back from break, you want to get back into message and try to make your point. And generally on a call-in radio talk show, they're going to be talking about all kinds of crazy stuff, but everything's racial. Doesn't matter. Even NASCAR is. Sure. But you have to come back and make that point, or at least try to. Do the best you can. No one's going to be perfect, and by the way, you can get a chair thrown at you by Bobby Knight for looking looking at them sideways on the wrong day. It's just the nature of the beast. But that's why he's a coach. If you don't want to play for Bobby Knight, don't take the scholarship. Don't go play for him. But if you're playing for Bobby Knight, he can be a little rough. That's just his style. But Bob is back posting, and Bob is a coach. But he knows how to win, and he's going to expect something in a particular way, and he's going to remind you of it. He may not be so nice. he doesn't necessarily remind people nicely, but it depends on the mood he's in or whatever. You know, our spokesman was busy talking about what an aristocrat he was and let it slide. He's not being very nice. He's just throwing a chair at someone. But if you're on one piece of advice I could offer you, and I don't care who's listening to this. If you're going to be talking you definitely want to have the mantra in your pocket or be able to come back and make your point in between a break. If you're there and you're saying something clever, they're going to keep you. As you're making your point, if they like you at all, they're going to keep you through a break on a talk radio show. And these breaks can last forever, and they're going to talk to you about all kinds of interesting things. Maybe you both were at the NASCAR event. But that's just striking up rapport with someone. That's typical human nature. But when they come back, they're most likely still going to be talking about that. Why? Because it's call-in radio. They want to burn up time. They want to make their sponsors happy by talking about interesting events that just happened, whatever. And you got to come back and make a point, make a mantra-style point, or go into the mantra from that. It's simple. It's just not easy to do. And if it's the first time you're doing it, and you know you screw something up, don't worry about it. One last thing I would like to tell you, now that you see what that mantra is and how Bob just posted, he posted a million times. Anytime you're posting anything online, that should be the first thing you post. Just post the whole thing. I noticed you posted something somewhere out west or something. Just post the whole thing. Then come back and make those individual points after you post that first. But feel free to comment, and feel free to ask any questions, and feel free to query others, because everyone's got a unique approach and has something unique to offer, or they wouldn't be posting on Bugs at all. And I'll do my best to get back with you on anything you ask me directly. That's what this is about. In the first seven, I went all in some very interesting different areas. Interesting to some don't find it interesting. You know, I'm doing that to try people get people interested in practical politics in the direction we're going on this blog. I think it's important. I think it's the most important thing on the planet right now, obviously, because it's the indigenous white rabbits of Europe. But everything comes back to the blog and the different ideals and topics we're talking about. That's where all this stuff has been developed. So feel free to comment. Feel free to ask questions. Everyone's going to have something to offer you. Simmons, you know, is going to have something intelligent to say. Hopefully, you know, everyone can screw up though, and don't be afraid of screwing up. Don't be afraid of Bob throwing a chair at you. Bobby Knight is Bobby Knight, and men like Bobby Knight are old school, and they can scare people. But that's the nature of Bob. Bobby Knight doesn't, you know, I've seen an interview with on television with Bobby Knight, and I was very, very young, and Bobby Knight, you know, I didn't understand why this guy was doing this, but, you know, he looks totally normal in an interview until he starts coaching. While he's just coaching, you know, it's just him. It is what it is. So don't ever take anything personal, just try to learn from it. One thing I will say, and I'll say this again, always print out the mantra and have it in front of you. Especially on a call-in radio show, because you're going to wait forever. You may say something interesting. The interviewer may—they're going to go to commercial or break. They always do that, and then you're going to get into all kinds of interesting topics and conversations. Then you're going to have to go back, and that can throw you off. If it happens to pros, it's going to happen to amateurs. Anyways, that's the last point I'll make about the racist. The comment posted by Bob on July 16th, 2009, at 9:35 p.m. I'm going to finish this Follow the White Rabbit, and we're going to talk about the Republicans a little. The Republican Party is a fascinating party from a simple mathematical perspective. It is the largest European Christian party in the history of the world. And it's funny because they don't represent any Europeans. The top of the Republicans, the handful of control points and whatnot, are controlled by neocons, and they keep on posting either Lone Rangers, you know, the self-hating white people, who have to have their Tontos, or they put out the Bobby Jindals and whatnot to represent whites. It's become funny and nearly unsustainable. And I'm going to read a post that was put on by Bob on Whitaker Online, and then we're going to talk about Republicans, and I'm going to flip some ideals out there, because it's a bird in the hand. It's something that it doesn't take any voting, it doesn't take any strenuous thing to take over the Republicans. It simply takes a consistent message and a few neat moves. In other words, Europeans already have the largest political party in the world, the Republicans. They're just not exercising power. What we want to do is get them to exercise power. It's there. There's an energy flow. We want to grab onto it. And there's a handful of different ways, techniques, whatever, to go in that direction. I'm not an expert on Republicans. I don't need to be. Bob has forgotten more about Republicans than I'll ever know. And Bob has put together a lot of coalitions. But we're talking about strategies to take the party back, to convert it to our means, which is very simple. It's already there. And I'm going to go into some ideas that came to me reading some of his latest, Bob's latest blog entries. Self-hate means no future. I just said that blacks were almost certainly right that Obama's win would have been far greater had he been white. This is heresy for conservatives. But I am anti-liberal, not conservative. I am only... The only purpose conservatives have is to be a harmless opposition. I'm not harmless. So let me agree with the liberals on another point they constantly make, which every professional conservative denies. It's racial. For the National Review, true Western civilization consists of sterile pedophile in a dress shouting at the ceiling in a dead language. This is the kind of opposition the establishment thrives on. In the broadest sense, the opposition is as sterile as the establishment. Political correctness offers us the future of an ant colony. Conservatives differ with them only in the nature of the ants they want. Political correctness sees a brown, stagnant future where mankind, each one of which is a carbon emitter, will fit in with a stagnant environment. The National Review sees a future of Latin America where a racially mixed population concentrates on going to church and living according to the dictates of the sterile ruling class. In both cases, one society is dedicated to guilt. Young people can spend their lives trying to appease God for their original sin, or they can spend their lives being sterile to keep down their carbon emissions. In both cases, they are born in sin and deserve less than nothing. Liberals and conservatives insist that any scenario smacks of racism. They are perfectly correct. This all started with white self-hatred. Once you learn self-hatred, it spreads the rest of your thinking. Conservatives now insist they are far more anti-white than liberals. They are certainly more desperately anti-white. They want all humans to be guilty of being human. Political correctness rests on the same foundation. And there's some interesting responses. When it comes to Republicans, the neocons, of course, are blocking everything. The big control group, I don't know all their control points. I haven't studied it. The funny thing about the two-party system is that the Democrats are radically different than the Republicans on how they operate from state to state. And every state, both parties will be different again. One thing I do know is that you have a huge block of red state and white voters that aren't being represented. You have two global trends in place. One trend against market-dominant minorities. I went into that. The neocons are a market-dominant minority. They are going to face heat. They're going to face heat on the financial front. Yeah, their big weapon is finance and foreign policy and all that, and they've been crushed. And you can crush them in front of elites over and over again. On the other side is Lone Ranger. And Lone Ranger is facing a lot of problems, too. There's two problems Lone Ranger faces. One, Tonto, when he gets numbers, doesn't want the Lone Ranger representing him. You know, Sotomayor doesn't want to be represented by white males. She wants to represent herself. And guess what? True information won't mean anything to her. True information won't mean anything to the black congressional committee or whatever they have, that committee they have that represents blacks. Why? Because they've been demoralized, or you could say moralized racially. Yeah, Sonia Sotomayor believes she's the greatest gift to the earth, and she's been told that her whole entire life, and true information won't mean anything to her. That's good. There's nothing wrong with that. We can use that energy. But what you have to understand is that Lone Rangers have problems with this. I'm going to talk about two pieces briefly before I put together some mini strategy or toss out some ideals, basically. On Front Page, I go to frontpagemag.com just to see what the neocons are thinking, and they're always thinking along the same lines. And David Horowitz is a big neocon. He's kind of like their one of their soul brothers. You know, he can put out a message for them, and he's generally on their message. He talked about Daryl Issa and the Republicans file a false report on the origins of the economic meltdown. Republican legislator Daryl Issa and the Republican staff of the Government Oversight Committee have put out a report on the cause of the economic meltdown that appears to be based on false premises and therefore draws false conclusions. The report claims that the economic crisis can be traced to government pressure on lenders to give loans to poor people and minorities whose credit would not warrant such loans. The statistical evidence shows, however, that this is false. The primary culprits in the mortgage crisis were no down payments or low loans or value, as pointed out in the previous blog. You can check the facts in this article. The position taken by Issa and many Republicans is not only factually wrong-headed, it has ugly racial overtones, intended or not. Republicans should back off from these charges unless they have answers to the evidence that shows otherwise. What's happening is the Republicans are pointing out the obvious, certain Republicans, that the economic meltdown was caused by bringing in all these brown people and giving them mortgages when they couldn't afford it. That's the obvious. Everyone around the world has pointed this out, by the way. Japanese publications have pointed this out. It's ridiculous. But what the neocons cannot think in racial terms. It has ugly racial overtones. They can't handle that. They just can't handle that. Most people think they do it to be wise or cute. Some of them do, but about 80% of them cannot. They're like a moth in front of the flame. They can't go there. They can't see it. They're not allowed. It's like self-deception. They're like a creature under themselves. They just can't see it. Well, that's good. That's good that they can't see it. But I think that's funny that many of the Republicans are starting to put pressure on them. And they're doing it by stating the obvious. It doesn't matter whether it's everything becomes racial. And many people think the neocons are just being cute, but they can't allow themselves to see it. It is like it's like a moth not being able to see the flame. Bob has talked about this, but Hebrews can be like this on many ways. The neocons are one such group. They practice self-deception on many different levels. They cannot see anything racially, and that sets up a big problem. That was on the frontpagemag.com, that's frontpagemag.com, their blog, and you can Google them, look them up, and that's David Horowitz's blog. He talks about this. This is at the top of his blog. There's another piece they had, which was Lone Rangers, and these Lone Rangers, Floyd and Mary Beth Brown. They're just a couple Lone Rangers, and they're very upset about Sonia Sotomayor. They're neocon Lone Rangers, and they're very upset. They're upset because, let me read some cutouts of their piece. They had a piece on frontpagemag.com, and it's just Floyd and Mary Beth Brown, B-R-O-W-N, and that's Sotomayor's selective empathy. They're upset because Sotomayor has racial interests. Well, they expect everyone else to have. Lone Ranger expects Tonto to not have any racial interest. See, when Tonto has racial interest, they don't know what to do. And they talk about this, and I'm going to read the piece. Judge Sotomayor is wrongly being told by Team Obama as an empathetic nominee. Of course, this is adjective is shown as a farce when one examines a record in two noteworthy cases. And she's talking about two cases, Frank Ritchie and Jeffrey Deskovic, where of course she discriminated against them. Yeah, she discriminated against them over race. And even though Sotomayor displayed a callous indifference to the suffering of these innocent men, Obama wants to ignore this case and confirm her immediately because she is a wise Hispanic woman. Another case showing her lack of empathy is, of course, then they go into Frank Ritchie. Frank Ritchie was, you know, one of the firemen she discriminated against for, I'm sure he was white. That's just the way it works, right? They have ethnic interests. She's been told her whole entire life she's a wise Latino woman. You're never going to tell her any different because true information doesn't mean anything to them. Right? We're not interested in changing the world. We're interested in taking this place, taking this thing back or exercising power in a way. And that's really all it takes in the Republican Party. Evidently, Judge Sotomayor only shows empathy when it is a member of her own race or gender. Well, yes. You see, Lone Ranger can't handle that about Tonto. They can't handle Tonto. Tonto's got numbers. He doesn't want Lone Ranger. They don't like that. Lone Ranger's supposed to cooperate. Tonto's supposed to cooperate. Tonto's supposed to sit behind Lone Ranger and take a message. That's not happening, is it? The Lone Ranger can't exist at 10% of the bus, and that's what's happening right in front of your eyes. While Obama and his allies want you to believe Sotomayor's a wise, empathetic Latina, these three occurrences directly contradict underlying the argument of Obama public relations campaign. Sotomayor is actually an advocate of old-fashioned identity politics. Wonderful. Isn't that wonderful? Justice is supposed to be blind. No, it's not. But in Sotomayor's case, what exists is her empathy is racially tinted. Republicans must vote against her confirmation and not give him more time to look into her record. Obama shouldn't be allowed to appoint a racist to the Supreme Court. You see, there's two things Lone Ranger can't survive with. They can't survive when Tonto goes racial, because they themselves aren't allowed to go racial. But yet they have to, because Tonto's went racial. I mean, it just becomes unsustainable. There's another thing that's funny. I was talking to one of the wise men about when do you think the Republicans will be forced to go racial? When will the elites have to have someone go racial? You see, the Democratic Party looks to be the stable foundation. You have all these very smart whites at all these big control points, and you have all these motley crew of minorities with Obama, you know, the Taliban running things. The problem is that you have a scenario happening right now, and it's getting pretty desperate. It's in California. California was supposed to be this dream multicultural, multiracial state. Well, California is so bankrupt, they have to issue IOUs. Well, that's bankrupt. You're in trouble if you have to issue IOUs. So it's obviously not working. What happens when the Tonto's, you see, there are two things Tonto's going to start doing. One, Tonto's going to become racial, and when he becomes racial, Lone Ranger doesn't know what to do, and nor do the neocons, because they're not allowed to see that. They just can't handle it. They can't keep a lid on things. But what happens when Tonto's start killing each other? What happens when California issues IOUs and Latinos, because of scarce resources, start going at it with Africans? Well, then you got big problems. That's the biggest problem for Lone Rangers. Right now in the United Kingdom, you have Pakistanis totally annihilating blacks and Africans and Muslims and all the above. I mean, it's like a racial cauldron. Well, Tontos do that. If there's too many ticks on a dog, as Bob says, they attack each other. And that's what's going to happen in California. When that happens, that'll produce a huge opportunity for Republicans. Now, would someone, one person on message, be able to take over? No, in my opinion, no. You got to have a chorus. You got to have everyone singing the same song and a chorus going on. You got to have, in other words, you got to have more than one. You're going to have a handful. But the opportunity's coming. The trend is there. Bob wrote a piece called The Mantra and We the People, and he talked about the Ronald Reagan. And the funny thing about Ronald Reagan was he did what someone thought you'd never do. He created this group called the Reagan Democrats. What the neocons are looking to do, they're expecting a big fight. They're expecting a fight to come in the South. In my opinion, and it becomes rather obvious. One of the wise men was talking to me about this, and they expect a huge fight there. Sanford is a senator or governor in South Carolina or whatever. They've targeted him because maybe he's their enemy, whatever. I don't know a lot about him because I don't know a lot about Republicans at the top. I know the party is the largest European party in the world, and they don't represent Europeans, which is kind of funny. I know that's unsustainable. But anyways, they want their girl Palin. I guess they like Palin. I've learned that when the neocons say string beans, I know I want baked beans. Yeah, whoever they want, I don't want. They like Cheney, I don't. It's an automatic gag reflex. That's the way you got to treat them. So anyways, they targeted Sanford. I don't know whether it was a knee-jerk reaction because they hate and fear white Southerners. Oh, they do. They believe that the whole future Republican Party is getting rid of them. However they're going to do that, I don't know. But there's a flaw in that. There's a flaw in that because they're expecting a fight. See, someone like me would give them a fight. Yeah, I would put together, what do they do, those beer hall pushes? I wouldn't. I'd put together a handful of, we'll call it the rebel hall pushes. I would present some type of big fight for them in the South, a big fight for the neocons in the South on some level. And that's obvious. They're prepared for that. I would give it to them. I would give them a fight all out, maybe headed by the political cesspool and James Edwards or something. You could put it together on a million different ways. You see, most people think Southerners like Bobby Jindal. They don't. But there's another strategy here. When Bob was talking about Reagan and We the People, And that's what the Republicans have to get back to. They have to get back to we the people. Well, the best ones that we at the people in Anglosphere, that's where you're at, you're in America, you're in Anglosphere, are we ourselves, Sinn Féin. When you get into the Reagan Democrats, the group that blew minds among the Democrats, the group that betrayed the Democrats, the group that voted their ethnic interests and will do so and will go racial faster than anyone are the Irish. There are no WASPs in the East. There are no WASPs in the Midwest. There are dominant pools of Irish voters. Part Irish voters, partial Irish voters. This did not occur to me. Let me go back and tell you a story. I was talking to someone from the United Kingdom. I won't say exactly where I was at. And we were talking about the different, in the United Kingdom, most people don't realize it, but every single ethnic group has their own box to check off. They take diversity to a Stalinist extreme. In other words, the English have their own box, the Welsh have their own box, the Scottish have their own box. They treat them all differently, like little individual races almost. Well, the Irish have their own box in all the United Kingdom. Yeah, in Ireland, you know, there's only a handful. The vast majority of Irish are not in Ireland. There's not that many there. The vast majority of Irish are in America. There's a ton in the United Kingdom outside of Ireland, and there's a ton in Australia, and there's a ton in America. But the reason they did that, the reason they subdivided, was that they didn't want all whites checking off the box. And I thought that was funny. Why the United Kingdom didn't want that? Well, one, they thought it was fanciful because it was not as good as divide or rule. But what they were worried about was Irish nationalism, because of how big they are. You're not dealing with a small group anymore. I suggest you look at those numbers. And they go we ourselves very quickly. They went we ourselves before the Founding Fathers said we the people or for us and our posterity. That's old. That's ancient to them. They do that naturally. It blew people's minds when they crossed over and voted for Ronald Reagan. They don't care. They will go national. And the funny thing about this, I always rip on nationalists, but the funny thing is, at 10% of the bus, I wasn't seeing the obvious, at one time. At 10% of the bus, British National Party, Hungarian National Party, Russian nationalists, it all becomes racial. There's no such thing as nationalism. It's all white. In other words, as soon as what they were afraid of is the obvious. The dominant group to go nationalism is going to be like an electrical current. In other words, you're on the bus in the ghetto, you're at 10%, we're on this side of the bus in America. The Russians have done more for the European bus, the Russian nationalists, than anything in the history of Europe. I mean, they just electrified the place because it's infectious. And it's inevitably racial. You can say culture all you want. It's inevitably racial. So what we want is we want a group to do that on our side of the bus. We're over here in Anglosphere. We want a group to do that. There's an obvious group that can do it. They already do it. And they'll naturally do it. They brought Ronald Reagan into power in many different areas. I don't think they brought him to power exclusively. I wouldn't say the whole entire election rests on the Irish, although Bob may disagree with me. You know, Bob could write a book about that coalition. But you don't have to do any voting to take back the Republican Party. You just have to exercise power. But what they're gearing up for, the neocons are gearing up for a fight in the South. I would give it to them. I would then backdoor them through the ethnic bloc, the dominant ethnic bloc. I would also backdoor them, backdoor the neocons' major benefactors, the Goldman Sachs. Well, there's another faction, the J.P. Morgan Chase, and they're not necessarily Jewish. I would try to backdoor them there. The ideal, you know, you have interesting enough, the groups like the Russians want to work with some elements of the Republican Party. Neocons can't allow that. I would backdoor them in international relations. I would kill them time and time again. It doesn't matter. Their major weapon is money and foreign relations. I can kill them there. I've laid it out. Bob can do it time and time again, much better than even I can. I'm not an expert on the Republican Party, but I would put together a cayenne Pokemon. I would present a front. It wouldn't necessarily be a false front, but I would give them a fight, and I would backdoor them and get them out of there. I don't know exactly how, but, you know, a problem well stated is half solved. You must come back to we the people. The easiest way to come back to we the people is to get a bunch of nationalists on the bus electrifying the place. The easiest way to do that is take your most nationalist feared group and let them do what they do. I was notified that there's a group that's become very, very popular in Western civilization. It's never been talked about in Stormfront, to my knowledge. We've never talked about it on Whitaker Online. It's called the Dropkick Murphys. Dropkick is just like D-R-O-P, Kick Murphys, M-U-R-P-H-Y-S. They're an Irish band. They sing old Irish tunes, but with kind of like a rock thing. And their concerts have become a huge cult feature for white kids. And middle age. I mean, you have some older Irish guys there, older whatever. They're huge in the South. They're huge in all these different places. But they're a white working class man. That's what they build themselves as. They're not white nationalists. They're not any type of nationalists. They're just Irish. You understand my point. I suggest you look them up. You don't believe me? Go to one of their concerts. Look around. There's a current there. That type of current brought Ronald Reagan into office. They can vote as an ethnic bloc, and they can exercise power as an ethnic bloc very quickly. We don't need anyone to vote. We just need to take back the Republican Party. And you have a handful of Lone Rangers. They're being nudged. They're under full pressure. They're under pressure. And at any given time, California could blow up, and that's unsustainable. It would be to the elite's advantage to have a racial agenda behind the Republican Party, even to triangulate off of. Now, what does it mean by triangulate? Well, some of the Democrats may want it to triangulate off of it. They can't put out the message, but they may want a good group of they may want someone like Bob putting out a message. Why? Because they think they can triangulate off of that. What's funny is this. This may work the same way. You know, the Republicans in my lifetime has always tried to triangulate the anti-racist message to get the Latino or African votes. It's never once worked because you can't triangulate that. Yeah, that's always going to go the Democrats' way. When it comes to racial politics, they would never be able to triangulate off something like Simmons. It just ain't going to work because the votes are always going to come his way. In other words, and once you get in there, it's pretty much over with. You could do anything you want to do, basically. You don't necessarily have to win an election because it's such a huge power block you'd put together overnight. Even if Ronald Reagan didn't win the election, he did. But even if he didn't, you most likely would have caused that huge Republican seizure of the Congress and the Senate later on, because it was such a huge block. But these are just some ideals in the head for grabbing that bird in the hand. You know, you got a bird right in your hand that won't fly for us simply because the neocons and the Lone Rangers hold them down. The neocons can't see anything. Believe it or not, they can't. They're ready for a fight in the South. That's the only thing they can see. Lone Ranger can't exist. And sooner or later, Tonto start killing each other. It's impossible to exist then. It could be to an elite's advantage to have racialists in there, whether it be to deal with the Russians on a straight-up level, whether it be to deal with money, whether it be to get the neocons out of the way. But this threefold strategy of some money elites, old money elites, whether it be the J.P. Morgan Chase Republicans, whatever, non-neocons, anything not neocon is okay. Even looking at the people that put out the message for the Republicans, the people that say off the wall stuff, Ann Coulter, I don't know a lot about her. Maybe many of you don't like her. I don't know, but I know this: certain parties have posted on Bugs every time she has posted, not quite mantra type thinking, but as close as any other Republican. But I've told you before, white women can do that. But the big key would be getting back to we the people, we ourselves, as the Irish say, for us and our posterity, and getting on a consistent message. And that message we have the message to help them get into power, help them win whatever they want. I mean, they have a super majority if they want it, but they have to be in a position. All you got to do is choose to exercise power. And there are many ways to go that. You need that current running. Well, there's an electrical current among what I would call the Irish. It's not bad for anybody any more than Russian nationalism. Why? Because it's not the 1800s, it's not the 1900s, it's 2009. At 10% of the bus, if someone jumps on your side of the bus, if some little Russian skinhead jumps on your side of your bus and starts throwing everyone off that they don't like, well then all the other guys scratch their heads and say, oh, we forgot we could do that. That's what's happened in Europe. That's how that current works. We got to get that current flowing. But it starts with the message. We have the message. We just got to get it out there. They want the message. Most of the Republicans want the message. It just hasn't been articulated to them. It's going to take more than one person. I would put together probably three fronts. I would maybe put together what I call the Rebel Hall push. I would have a couple different meetings of certain operatives, and maybe Bob knows who they are in the South. I would then have a handful of meetings with certain like-minded operatives in the that Bob would certainly know, whether it be Reagan Democrats or whatever, and the different Republican factions in the Midwest and even maybe out West, like-minded individuals. I would try to get them on a consistent, singing a song. We need a chorus going. You need more than one person. I don't think one person standing up because of demoralization, because the Republicans, the neocons have done a brilliant job of shutting down singular people. Not that they can hold it back forever. They can't hold back a dominant personality. They certainly can't hold back a dominant personality when you have a chorus going on among the structural points across the Republican Party. But those are three key sectors, in my opinion. The Irish, because they already said we ourselves, they've said it for hundreds of years, and they'll go, according to our enemies, they're worried about them going more racial and nationalistic and taking down Anglosphere more than anyone. That's wonderful. They definitely helped Ronald Reagan get elected. They did what no one thought. They voted their ethnic interest economically, regardless of what anyone thinks. They don't care. They don't care what you think. If it comes down to red-haired children going extinct and it gets articulated to them, they will burn everything. They don't care. They think in those terms. They're way more nationalist naturally than any other group in Western civilization. Our enemy knows that. Even Hebrew elites have talked about, Jewish elites have talked about partnering with the Irish. Well, they're a dominant bloc if they choose to be. And they can choose to be in the blink of an eye. They have organizations, way more so than, let's say, their cousins, the Scotch-Irish in the South. And this, they're not antagonistic. You know, everyone thinks Teddy Kennedy represents the Boston Irish. Well, Bob Whitaker knows differently. Yeah, anyone with half a brain that's worked with him knows differently. That's like saying Bobby Jindal. It's the equivalent of saying Bobby Jindal represents the South. He doesn't. It ain't going to happen. But that's the end of this Follow the White Rabbit, and feel free to discuss any of these topics on the blog. That's just an open discussion on the Republicans throwing out some ideals. But I would present that big fight for them in the South, and I would put together an ethnic bloc through the North. I would then use certain money elites that are sick of the neocons. I'm not an expert on all the Republican Party structural points. State to state, they're different, just like the Democrats are different state to state. The RNC has nothing but a bunch of neocons, and the neocons' main power block is money. Their main power block is foreign relations, but their main power block has failed on both counts. You can run against the Goldman Sachs neocons all day long and twice on a Sunday. I don't know. I've never heard of the J.P. Morgan Chase neocons. They don't. They're there, I'm sure, but they don't nearly exist. But that's another group. But those are just ideals. Those are just ideals off the top of my head. But it's going to take a chorus. That chorus is going to have to start with we the people. I would start the chorus. I would get the chorus going just like I would do what works. I would get the groups what you think of as Reagan Democrats. I would start talking to and putting together, Rebel Hall pushes, put together a strategy, and it only takes a handful in each area. I wouldn't exclude anyone necessarily. Me a white rabbit, you a white rabbit. But it's already there. You just got to exercise power or put yourself in a position to. But it's going to take more than one, in my opinion. It'll take a chorus. We got the song. We just got to teach them to sing it. There are certain money interests that could make that very valuable. Yeah, they don't care, and nor do we. Me a white rabbit, you a white rabbit. But that's just some ideals, and feel free to discuss it or anything else I've said, because this is all practical politics. And hopefully Bob will chime in on Republic. I'm sure he's cooking up all kinds of stuff, because that's the way his mind works. But this is the end of another episode of Follow the White Rabbit. This is the end of another episode of Follow the White Rabbit. Follow the White Rabbit, again, is a game that will teach you practical politics. Practical politics is practical because it is non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is voting politics or rule-based politics. And the ultimate, of course, is full-spectrum practical politics, engaging and taking down an opponent, a system, by any means necessary, within the rules, within the law, but never breaking them. And this is the end of another episode of Follow the White Rabbit. Thank you for listening.